Hello, and welcome back to the UFO and Aliens podcast. I'm Rick Black.
And I'm Robert Wiley.
Robert, did you see any of the Northern Lights this weekend?
I did not. We had company in town, so it was kind of stressful around the house. Not stressful, I guess. It was fun, but had a lot of activities going on, so I never did quite make it out. We wanted to, but I saw some amazing pictures online.
Yeah, I went outside. I heard from a friend that you can't see it down here in Florida. You couldn't see it with your naked eye, but if you take your phone and you record it with your phone, then you'd be able to see it. And so I went out Saturday night, and I took my phone out there, and I did that, and I didn't see anything.
You didn't see anything?
No.
No mysterious lights flashing through the sky?
No, I kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
I heard on the news this morning that you could see them all the way down to Key West.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So do you know what's going on with solar flares or something? I really didn't pay attention.
It seems like we've had a lot going on, right? We had the solar eclipse, mm-hmm. and now we've had the solar storms, basically, where I saw they put out warnings saying that this could disrupt communications and satellites and things like that, although I never heard any serious reports of anything bad. But like I said, just saw a lot of really cool pictures. I saw somebody had posted something. They were on a flight out of Tampa. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Friday night, and the pictures they took were amazing.
Oh,
as
wow.
far as the pink and the green and the blue.
They get up into the atmosphere.
Yeah,
they got high up in the atmosphere.
Got up really high there, and what a sight that must have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be the flight that I wasn't sitting by the window. I'd be in the aisle.
Of course. I always try to get the window. I always try. So today we got two cases that we want to talk about. The first one is a case of the Stephen Mekalak encounter at Falcon Lake. And what you were going to do?
I'm going to do the Malmstrom Air Force Base missile incident and UFO sightings.
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and start.
Okay. I'm excited. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I'm just going to read the report, and then at the end, or you can interrupt me if you have anything that just kind of,
I like it.
Into your head.
I like it.
So here we go. It's really not that long. It's pretty short. During Victoria Day weekend, a Canadian Stephen Mekalak of Winnipeg, he was a mechanic by trade, decided to do some prospecting in the Whiteshell Provincial Park.
So he was digging for some gold.
I think he was digging for some silver, but yeah, you're on the right track. Mekalak was an amateur geologist and had been prospecting in the area many times. Others had found several quartz veins near Falcon Lake that were associated with silver deposits. And Mekalak had himself found a new promising site. So on May 19th, 1967, he traveled from Winnipeg to Falcon Lake, where he spent the night in a motel on the Trans-Canadian Highway. Mekalak left his motel at 5:30 in the morning and headed north into the wilds of the park. At about 9 a.m., he found a quartz vein near a small stream. At 11 a.m., he ate lunch, then continued to examine the quartz formation. At 12:15, Mekalak's concentration was disturbed by a cackling of some geese. He looked up, and he was surprised to see two red, glowing, cigar-shaped objects descending at about 45-degree angle. As they came nearer, their appearance became more oval and then disc-shaped. So I don't know if when he was first seeing this, they appeared to be cigar shaped. And then as it got closer, he saw it differently, right. Or if they morphed from a cigar shaped into a disc shape. Yeah, he's not real clear on this report, but I found that interesting. So as he's looking at these things, one of them stopped and hovered, and the other one descended and landed on a large flat rock about 160 feet away from him. After a few moments, the object still in the air departed, changing from red to orange to gray as it flew into the west and disappeared beyond the clouds. Now, the object on the ground also turned from red to gray and finally to the color of, quote, hot stainless steel, surrounded by a golden-hued glow. He'd been wearing welding goggles while chipping at the quartz to protect his eyes from flying rock fragments. Now, I'm not a welder, right. But aren't those things so dark you can't see?
Yeah, unless it's the flame of the actual arc right. of the weld.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's pretty dark.
What is he?
So this would be pretty bright if he's seeing it through this mask.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine wearing welding goggles while you're working with a,
Ryan.
You know, rock hammer.
That's true. See, you
can't
it
see what you're hitting unless it's really, you know, like yeah. lit up. I would think. I mean, I'm not a welder.
But it was during the day. Mm-hmm. So maybe the light helped him.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a welder, but I just thought those things were like super dark.
And you're not a prospector either, obviously.
I am not.
Because that could be like the tools of the trade for prospecting in Canada, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I'm not an expert. I'm not. Okay. So he has these welding goggles on, and they serve an additional purpose of protecting his eyes from the brilliant light, purple light, that was shining through the openings of the object's exterior. The object was making a hissing sound and a whining noise, and it gave off a sulfurous smell. For several minutes, Michalak stayed where he was and sketched the object. After about half an hour...
Wow.
A door opened on the side of the object, revealing a lighted interior. Michalak decided to move closer, and he was about 60 feet from the object. He began to hear two voices over the other sounds coming from the object. He thought that this thing was an experimental American craft of some sort, so he called out in English. Mm-hmm. Well, there was no response, so he tried Russian, then German. Then Italian.
Who is this guy?
Then French. Then Ukrainian.
Wow.
And then went back to English again. Got no response.
Hmm.
So he's a mechanic. He's a prospector. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 languages.
Yeah. Is he like a spy or something like that? Is he like a James Bond kind of a guy?
Yeah. I mean, he's a very mysterious fellow.
Because who sees these kind of objects and thinks, you know, I'm going to sketch this?
30 minutes.
Right.
It's sitting there for 30 minutes.
Because, you know, a lot of these reports, people are somewhat frightened, you know, and, unaware. Yeah, and
the whole incident's going to be like, you know, 1 minute, 30 right. seconds or something like that. But no, this is a long thing for him. So he had to summon up his nerve and approach the open door, and he stuck his head inside. And he saw a maze of lights on what appeared to be a panel and beams of light. Horizontal and diagonal patterns. He also saw a cluster of lights flashing in a random sequence, like, quote, like on a computer, end quote. Now, this is 1967.
Right.
What kind of computers did we have back then?
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And they had
the big tape reels.
They had lights on them.
Lights, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's probably trying to describe what he knew, right?
Right.
From his perspective. Okay, so he didn't see anybody, and he pulled back and waited, and suddenly, three panels slid together, closing the opening completely. He examined the outer surface of the object, noting that it was like highly polished colored glass with no breaks or no seams in its surface, and he touched it, and it melted his glove.
Wow.
Yeah, you like that? So, hey, there's some evidence there.
Yes.
He's got a little melted glove.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without warning, the object moved. And something like exhaust vent that was now in front of him. And it was about 9 inches high, 6 inches wide. And it contained a uniform pattern of round holes, each about a 16th inch in diameter. And there was a blast of hot gas that shot out of these holes into his chest. It set his shirt and his undershirt on fire. So he caused him a lot of pain. He tore off of his garments, of burning garments, and threw him to the ground. And he looked up in time to see the craft depart like the first one had and felt a rush of air as it ascended. So caught him on fire.
Wow. So he had a lot of like physical evidence.
Oh, I'm going to show you a picture here in a minute.
Okay.
After the object was gone, he noticed a strong odor of burning electrical insulation along with the sulfur smell that he had noticed earlier. And some moss on the ground had been set on fire by his shirts. Mm-hmm. So he stamped those out. The spot where the object landed looked as if it had been swept clean, but piled up. In a 15-foot circle with a collection of pine needles and dirt and leaves. And he looked around, and he developed a severe headache. He got nauseous. He broke out in a cold sweat, and his nausea got worse, and then he threw up. Mm-hmm. He decided to head back to the motel, and on the way back, he had to stop several times because of vomiting. Mm-hmm. Radiation sickness?
Maybe.
Yeah. Finally, after asking for help from a passing RCMP officer and being refused, he reached the motel. It was 4 p.m. He entered the coffee shop and asked where he could find a doctor. He was told that the nearest doctor was in Kenora, Ontario, 45 miles east of Falcon Lake. He decided to go back to Winnipeg rather than go into Ontario. The next bus to Winnipeg didn't come through until about 8:45. So this is the first time we're hearing that he's traveling by bus.
Right.
So he went to his room, called his wife. He told her, don't worry, but there's been an accident. And he said, he sent his son to meet him at the bus terminal. He got to Winnipeg about 10:15, and his son immediately took him to the hospital where his headache and nausea were treated. And the curious burn marks on his chest in the shape of a grid were noted. Hmm. Here, I'm going to show you the picture. It's right there. Isn't that an interesting little wound he's got there?
That is quite the wound.
Can you describe it? This is not TV.
Right. There's probably half a dozen, if not a dozen, small squares.
Yeah, but they're in a pattern.
In a pattern of a square, right.
Looks like he laid on a waffle iron.
Exactly. That's the perfect way. So maybe that talks about the ventilation or the exhaust that he said he experienced.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you this. Was this a well-documented case?
It was well-documented.
So he didn't let this set. He immediately started telling everyone, hey, I've had this experience. Mm-hmm. Here's what happened.
Yep.
And I'm sure he was met with much skepticism.
Oh, yeah.
Even with the physical evidence.
Yeah. So that's the whole report. But through a little bit more research, they did. The Royal Canadian Air Force had an investigation. They went out there and they took samples and photographs, and they had aerial blah, blah, blah. And got the U.S. Air Force was involved. Aerial Phenomena Research Organization was involved. The Condon Committee was involved. Mm-hmm. So everybody's looking at this thing. The initial conclusions assumed that Mikulak was hallucinating as a result of alcohol consumption.
Did they find any alcohol on him or in his bloodstream?
Well,
or?
They didn't report anything like that. But the hotel where he stayed at, mm-hmm. He had like 6 beers the night before, so we know he was a drinker.
Okay,
but that doesn't explain if he was drunk. Right. That day. It was like the night before.
Right.
You know, you can have I don't know, I can't have 6, but you can probably have six beers one night and then be completely sober.
But that doesn't explain the burn patterns. Doesn't explain the burn clothes.
Here's what some people think. They think that it was some kind of an accident that he was involved in.
Right.
And he made up the UFO story to cover the fact that he had been drinking and he had this accident. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the...
So what's the pros of doing that, though? Because if he was out there on his own, mm-hmm. let's say he has too much to drink, why wouldn't you just call and say, yeah, I had a few too many?
Well, we don't know the details of this man's life.
Exactly.
Maybe if he'd done that, his wife would have left him because who knows? Maybe. But, you know, there are a lot of reasons for people to make up stories to hide the truth. I have seen lots of people making up lies to hide the truth.
Right.
With everything.
That just seems like such a spectacular lie if you've just screwed around and had a few too many beers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is quite the story, though. And we do have evidence.
Yeah.
We've got the burn glove. We've got the grid mark on his chest. Well, it's kind of like, not his chest. I wouldn't call that chest. It's like sternum down.
Yeah. Down to just past his belly button a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. And like, why would you go through? And if you're lying,
what else could have caused that?
Right. And why would you do that to yourself? you know what I mean? Like,
well, I wasn't under the impression that he did that to himself,
right,
but to be part of this story,
right?
But that was just part of the accident. Accident where that is the result,
right?
What maybe it wasn't a spaceship, but he doesn't want anybody to know what really happened.
Yeah, I could see that, but it just seems, you know, it's easy on these things to start checking why they don't make sense. But then there's other reasons to check why it does make sense. Mm-hmm. And who knows? I mean, like, I'm not saying it happened or it didn't happen. I'm just saying, looking at the evidence, that's something I would try to see both sides of the story to come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know where I'm at on this one.
And of course it's 1967. Things are different back then. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know what's going on. The Cold War is happening. There's a lot of crazy things. Yeah. We've already talked about several incidents that have happened around this time period.
Mm-hmm. I seem to be doing a lot of cases from the 60s.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm not picking them on purpose.
Well, I just think that's where you have a lot of that. And then it kind of died off for a little bit. Now we're starting to see them pick back up a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as reports and people coming forward.
Yeah. Regardless of that, I think it's an interesting case. There is a lot written on this for anybody that wants to look into it further. There's a lot of things to read about it.
Right.
So talk about Maelstrom.
Maelstrom. Okay. I'm going to go to 1967 myself.
Oh, my gosh. We did not plan this. We did not plan that at all.
we don't tell each other what stories we're doing until right before we get in here to start recording. So I found that interesting there that when you were saying 1967. So Maelstrom Air Force Base, it's in Montana, out in the great big sky country is what they call it. And back on a Thursday morning, March 16th in 1967, there was a captain and a first lieutenant, and they were part of the Echo Flight Missile Combat Crew. So what these guys did is they managed the silos for our intercontinental ballistic missiles. They were called Missilemen. And they had quite an event happen to them that early in the morning on the 16th. Now, the flight location, the Echo Flight, or where the launch centers are, about 85 miles to the southeast of Maelstrom Air Force Base. And they'd had some missile maintenance crews and security teams camped out. There was two different facilities, and they were camped out there. They had been doing some work on those silos earlier in the day. It got late. They decided since they were far away, they would just stay there for the night. Then things kind of take a turn, not for necessarily the worst, but they kind of take a turn. And there starts about 5 o'clock in the morning. They start receiving multiple reports of UFOs from the security patrols. And even some of the maintenance crews had seen some of these UFOs. And one of the airmen who first saw the object, he said it appeared to be a star, but then it started zigzagging across the sky, and he saw another light. It do the same thing. This time it was larger and closer. And so he called his boss out and said, "You've got to come take a look at this."
Yeah.
And they both watched these lights streaking directly above them, stopping, changing directions, very high speed, and then would return overhead. And one of these UFOs was actually reported over one of the missile silos.
Right.
So the security guards, they start getting on the phone. They start talking to their higher commanding officers, who was not in a good mood getting woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning and hearing this, what he thought, you know, are these guys drinking? What's going on? This is unlike them. He says, okay, hangs up the phone with them. He follows that chain of command and calls his superior officer, who is not very happy at being woke up and told this story. And in the middle of that call, he gets another call from the security guard who is now shouting. He's frightened. He said, this thing is hovering right over the gate. It's right over the silo. What are we supposed to do? What do we do right now? So what's crazy about this story is it's not just one person. This is a lot of folks in this area that are seeing these things.
Yeah, and they're trained observers too.
Exactly. Yeah, because there's security. And in a missile silo like that has a lot of importance.
You get a lot of high clearance.
High clearance. They know what's going on.
I'm waiting for you to tell me that these things went offline.
Right. And they even went to the point of saying, do we attack this thing? Ooh. And the higher commanders go for it. And one of the guys said, I don't think it's going to do any good.
I'm not going to shoot this thing.
And later, one of the guards reported that the object was saucer-shaped.
Okay.
with the red glowing lights. So see, okay. That's what always amazes me about all these is the lights. Is there any significance to the red or the amber or what is it about the lights?
I covered a couple of stories, missile bases, red glowing orb over the gate.
It
seems like it's the same thing.
It's amazing. And so one of the guys has to get off the phone with his commander during the calls because one of the security officers had been injured. They didn't go deep into how he was injured, said he had to be evacuated later
was
in the day.
Did they say if it was because of this incident? Or
they think it was because of the incident. They don't think it was attacking or provoking. They don't know if he got too close to the object. It was very unclear.
Okay.
Because what happened too, I mentioned this happened in 1967. They reported all this stuff and it kind of got buried and put away until 30 years later when a lot of these guys got back together and said, we never got any answers on this, So they did some digging and found some things. And, but yeah, you're right. A couple hours later, all of a sudden they see a couple more UFOs and now one of the missiles goes offline from armed to no longer armed.
Right.
And within seconds, all 10 of them go off.
Yeah. And these missiles are not connected. You don't, right. There's no switch where you could turn them off. All at once, you have to individually turn each one of them off, and they just all went off.
They all went off, and they said it was a status due to guidance and control, or what they say in the business, GNC system fault.
Okay.
No power had been lost. The missiles simply were not operational because of some unexplainable reason, and each of their guidance and control systems had basically malfunctioned at the same time.
Okay. I am a firm believer that these are real events. They have happened at too many places.
Right.
And the story is the same. They come in, they turn off our missiles as if to say,
settle down.
They're not afraid of us.
Right.
But
give peace a chance, John Lennon.
Well, I hope that's what they're saying.
Right.
Are they saying, you have no chance against us. We can turn these things off.
Right. Kind of flexing their power.
They haven't shown us any kind of offense that they have, thank goodness.
Right. But they haven't tried to launch the missiles.
No. Yeah.
They've just shut them down. So maintenance crews work
actually,
on this thing.
Actually, that reminds me. There was one incident where it showed that they had launched missiles that weren't launched. And so we had to call Russia and say, hey, nothing's launched. We're
not psyching you out here.
There's something going on with our systems.
Right.
We didn't launch anything. So that was a little scary. That could cause a false,
absolutely. And especially since the government and the Air Force as a whole says, there's never been any threat to national security with any of these incidents.
This is definitely a threat.
Right?
This is definitely a threat.
Because basically these missiles were down for a full day.
Oh, yeah.
A full day.
Okay.
Until the maintenance crews could get them back online. Now, these weren't the same maintenance crews that were there that saw the incidents. They were relieved, come in, they start doing reports. And like I said earlier, the reports kind of got buried and everything was just hush hush. It was reported that two of the guys on the maintenance crew were flown up to Offutt, Nebraska and debriefed and kind of didn't hear anything else after that. That was pretty incredible as far as that. That goes. But I think the biggest thing is they bring Boeing engineers in and they conduct a bunch of tests and they cannot duplicate why that would happen.
These are our highest MIT grads.
Exactly. So they have all these engineers and even some Air Force folks, their laboratory people come in. They have several different people and they basically say there was no significant failures, engineering data or findings that would explain how 10 missiles were knocked off alert. And no technical explanation that it could explain the whole event.
Yeah. Like I said, I believe this one. I mean, there's no doubt. Absolutely.
And this one's another one, too, that if you want to go in and, there's pages and pages and pages of all these different, I'm trying to summarize here a little bit of basically the event that happened. But so you have an airman that's injured. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
multiple people.
He could have been injured by running from one place to the other and twisting his ankle.
That's true.
There's no information on that.
You have multiple people seeing this. And some people saying basically all hell broke loose that morning. And it was something like they had never seen before.
Yeah.
And then the reports kind of get buried. So I was thinking about this one. And, you know, the official stance a lot of times is, and especially here lately, if you look at some things, it's like, look, some of these things that people are seeing, we'll acknowledge it, but it's stuff you shouldn't be seeing because you don't, it's advanced technology that we have and we don't want anybody else to know we have it. But again, we're in 1967. So my question to you is, if this is this advanced technology that we have, because another interesting thing that the engineers, I forgot to mention this, said the only thing that they could think of that would possibly be able to do something like this is an EMP. But right. In 1967, there was nothing capable to shut down 10 missiles as an EMP, basically.
Right.
That technology wasn't there. Right, exactly. Except in Marvel, in the Marvel universe. So if we have all this great technology and we're so advanced,
well, how do we know we don't have that technology?
But why wouldn't we use it? Aren't we putting our servicemen and women in danger when we're sending them off to these wars in Vietnam and Kuwait and Iraq and Ukraine and all these places? Why wouldn't we start using this stuff? What's the benefit in us holding on to that and costing American lives?
If we have that
technology.
That's a good point. You come up with a scenario there. Mm-hmm. I'll come up with one just to play devil's advocate. They have created this EMP device that would shut everything down, but it would shut everything down, including our stuff. So they couldn't take it into war. It would shut us down too.
Okay, fair enough.
So that could be one
fair enough
reason. I don't believe they had that. I believe this was an alien technology that came in and shut down the missiles. Calm down.
Settle down, everybody.
So,
great cases.
I love it.
Two great cases, I think. I love, I've always been fascinated with UFOs and joining you here on the podcast has let me take a deeper dive in some of this stuff. And it's super exciting to learn more and more about it and have more and more questions. So hopefully everybody else is enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. I will have to tell you this. Our numbers have gone up a little bit.
Great.
So
keep it going. Tell your friends. Tell your family.
Remember this.
Yes.
Believe none of what you hear and half of what you read.
Always.
If you like the show, we would like to encourage you to help support the show. You can help us out with just $3 a month. Just go to the website, click on support. We'd really appreciate the help. We'd be happy to give you a shout out. In addition to that, I think we're going to tell you a little story about the UFO and Aliens podcast sticker.
Yes, we still got to do that. So listen up for that in the coming episodes.
Okay. Well, these are really cool. Yeah. You really want one.
Be the first on your block to get one.
Yeah. If you have a story you would like to share with us, just send us an email. UFO and Alien Podcast@gmail.com. I'm Rick Black.
And I'm Robert Wiley.
And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.